He shrugged with a little smile that did inappropriate things to my stomach.
Pickles and strawberries and Skittles.
Finley raced over to the blanket. And low tide, I said softly. He'd remembered his promise, and damn if that wasn't more attractive than his looks. And low tide. We stood there staring at each other for a moment longer than neighborly friendliness suggested.
So, how was your week been?
He asked, leading me to the blanket. Full of Steve and choices and diner food, I replied, crossing my legs under me and sitting next to Finley. You?
Work and urchin chasing,
he said, digging containers out of the cooler and tossing a wink at Finley.
Maybe I could introduce you to Christina. She's Hastings' wife. Super level-headed, nice. All that. Owns a shop in town, since you're stuck there for another week or so.
I have friends, I said defensively.
Here?
He questioned, handing me a plastic container. Well, no. I have Mia and Joey up in Nag's Head, and Sam will be back in a couple of weeks to spend the summer with me. She had to fly home to Colorado so she could take care of a couple things and grab more clothes. The rest of my friends are, well, a lot of other places.
Well, it never hurts to have more friends, and I'm happy to hook you up.
I thanked him, and we devoured our snacks while Finley regaled me with tales of her week. She'd baked cookies with her grandmother, then visited the aquarium and the ship museum, and taken a kiteboarding lesson. On the ocean? I asked, letting my mouth hang open in over-exaggeration.
Yep, I had a vest on. No biggie.
She brushed a handful of red curls behind her ear, revealing a smattering of freckles that hadn't been there last week.
Can I go search now?
She asked Jackson, already bouncing on her knees.
Stay close,
he instructed. And she was off, racing toward the water. I helped Jackson pack up our picnic, secured the bag to a large rock, and then we headed toward where Finley walked along the waterline.
Okay, see where the sandbar has a little break in the middle?
We paused where a shallow rivulet of water ran through the bar. This is the Riptide? My eyes narrowed as I studied the water running from the pool in the sandbar back to the ocean. It's so small.
Sure, right now. Bring in the tide and the amount of water it's sucking back out grows exponentially.
Seems right. I scanned the sand on the bank, hoping to find another piece of glass to add to my collection. I mean, it's always the things that look harmless that end up wrecking you, right? He studied my face for a handful of seconds before nodding.
Yeah, I guess you could say that. If you're the kind of person always looking for the Riptide.
I'm actually the opposite, if you can't tell. Just standing in the middle of it, thinking it's harmless, surprised when it knocks my feet from under me. I look down the beach, where Finley was doing some searching of her own. So, what's she looking for? Jackson's eyes narrowed slightly, watching Finley pick something up.
She wants a perfect conch shell. We come out a lot at low tide so she can search.
We passed a family building a sandcastle, and I offered them a smile. What's she going to do when she gets the perfect conch? Jackson grinned.
Decide she wants something else and start that search?
I chuckled. Typical girl. We want what we want until we have it, and then it's on to the next thing.
That's most guys, too,
he countered. You? He shook his head.
Not really. At least not since Finley was born. Kids have a way of changing the way you look at the world and your role in it.
He paused, bending down to grab something. He brushed his thumb over it and then grinned, handing it to me.
Here you go. It's pink. That color's really rare.
He dropped a piece of sea glass in my hand. Its peachy pink color caught the sun as I flipped it over in my palm. Thank you. I crossed behind him and dipped it into the water, letting the next wave wash away the sand. It's beautiful. I didn't realize there were rare colors.
Oh yeah, there's classifications and everything. Christina makes jewelry with it. Her shop's down by the bakery. I bet she'd be happy to teach you all about the different colors. He raised his eyebrows in an obvious way. What are you? The matchmaker for friends? I teased. It wasn't a half bad idea to acquaint myself with the local shops or to make a friend. Okay, give me the address and I'll go visit the shop.
Good. That's good,
he said with a nod.
Hey, slow down!
Finley turned and nodded, slowing from her run to examine the ground more carefully. We walked a fair distance in companionable silence, and I let the waves lull my head into a calm sort of quiet.
Tell me about the truck.
What? I startled.
The giant F-250 in your driveway that you said was left to you. Tell me about it.
He looked at me with a mixture of expectation and patience, like he knew I'd eventually tell him and was willing to wait for it. That, I ran my fingers over the sea glass as my throat tightened in warning. That is a really long story.
That you don't want to tell.
It's more complicated than that. Where I'm from in Alabama, the truck kind of tells the story for me. Everyone knows. It's nice to be somewhere where it's my choice to tell, or not. I left out the part where my anxiety attacks shut down even the possibility of talking about it most days.
Does it have anything to do with why you bought the house that time, forgot?
His tone was easy and he kept his eyes on Finley, which helped my throat loosen the smallest degree. It has everything to do with it, I admitted. The wind whipped a strand of hair over my face, and I twisted it up around my ponytail to keep it out of the way. Gray clouds moved up the coast quick enough that I could visually track the movement. That's not serious, right? I asked, pointing at the sky.
No, Jackson answered. It's too early for hurricanes or anything. Might mess with your drilling schedule, though.
How would you know that?
I ran into Steve when I got home and asked. That's also how I knew that you usually stop by around now to check on the progress. It's amazing what happens when you ask him things. He gives you answers. Novel concept.
His voice was flat, but his eyes sparkled with the tease. Yeah, yeah.
Daddy, look!
Finley raced over to us, a small conch in her hand.
Not big enough, but good for today.
Jackson dropped down to examine her treasure.
Whoa, it's gorgeous, Finn. Worth the walk?
Yep, I'm gonna see if I can find another one. Morgan, want this one?
Her eyebrows rose in question, and I found myself smiling bigger than I had in a long while. I would be honored to have it, I told her, bringing myself level with her. She grabbed it from Jackson and presented it to me with a flourish, like I wouldn't know she'd actually been the one to give it to me if he had handed it over. Thank you, I told her as I held it up to study its markings. I will treasure it. She grinned, big and wide, her nose scrunching in the best way.
Good! I'll find more!
She smacked a kiss on Jackson's cheek and then raced off back toward the house, examining the beach with a new intensity.
Be prepared to own quite a seashell collection, Jackson warned as he watched her.
I clasped the shell she'd given me in one hand, and the glass from her father in the other, as a sweet feeling that I was scared to identify swept through me. I felt too close to peace, too comforting to rely on. She has your smile, I told him as we followed her, walking the path where the water met the sand and swept over our feet every so often.
Thanks. Lucky for her, she mostly resembles Claire,
he mused. Is that your wife? I asked, then cringed. If you don't like to talk about it, I completely understand. I have no business prying.
I'm sure prying into your business, he retorted with a grin that quickly faded. Claire and I were never married. We were engaged for about 4 months, though.
He tucked his thumbs into his pockets and looked ahead to where Finley was digging in the sand.
That's a long story, too.
I walked silently next to him, deciding if he wanted to share, that was fine, and if he didn't, that was okay too. I didn't move here to poke at someone else's wounds.
We met in college,
he said with a soft smile. In Maine? No, she was on a full ride to Boston University for drama and theater. And I was at MIT as a legacy who started majoring in frat parties 101, but graduated with a degree in oceanography.
I blinked a few times.
What? Didn't beg me for an MIT guy?
His smile nearly tied my tongue in knots.
I don't know you well enough to make assumptions, even though I may have, considering you look... I gestured up and down his torso.
Look like what?
He teased. Like you want to finish your story. I flashed a sugar-sweet smile at him.
Uh-huh.
His tone dripped with sarcasm. Something stirred inside my chest, as if part of me had been asleep for too long and was blinking awake, shielding her eyes from the sun. Except Jackson was the sun. For the first time since ever, I felt a sense of connection to a man who wasn't Will. I jerked my eyes from his and focused on Finley walking ahead of us.
We hit it off junior year,
he continued, either not seeing or ignoring my mini freakout.
And then, after graduation,
he looked away as his voice softened, and I knew he wasn't with me. He was with her.
I joined the Coast Guard, and Finn was born the next September. I proposed to Claire while she was in labor, and she laughed and called me an idiot.
He smiled, shaking his head. But she said yes, I assumed. I hadn't taken him for a Coast Guard guy, but I guess it made sense. The Coast Guard probably employed tons of oceanographers. It didn't stop the tiny piece of panic from rising in my throat, though. The Coast Guard was still the military, but he was a scientist, not one of the frontline guys.
She said yes,
he confirmed.
It was the happiest day of my life.
I found another one,
Finley shouted, waving a shell above her head.
Good job, honey,
Jackson answered. Without coming to show us her treasure, Finley continued her hunt. She's a big bottle of joy, isn't she? I asked, watching her fight with her hair.
She's Claire. A little bit of my recklessness, sure, but that crazy optimism, all her mother.
His voice trailed off, but then he took a deep breath.
She left us when Finn was about 4 months old. Got an offer for a pilot in LA and said she'd come back as soon as they finished filming.
But she didn't, I guessed. That look in his eyes, he was still in love with her. It was the same look Will got when he talked about Peyton, all wistful but resigned. He shook his head.
Claire's always been easily distracted by shiny things, and there are a lot of stars to shine out there. But who knows? Maybe one day.
He shrugged. My heart sank. Even if she hadn't really loved Jackson, how could any mother walk away from her child and never come back? And you became a single father with a baby. He nodded, watching Finn with the rapt look of an adoring parent. It was the same way Paisley looked at her son, the way my mama looked at me.
My parents were already gone, and Vivian loves Finn desperately, so I moved here, to the only family we had left.
You're one of the really good ones, aren't you? I asked before I could stop myself. His slight laugh was anything but funny.
No. That's the kicker. I'm not. Anything I am that resembles good is because of her.
He nodded toward Finley.
I've always been an asshole. Selfish, careless, impetuous, you name it. But for her, I'll be anything she needs. I'll rip the world apart to keep her safe. And I'll make damn sure I don't give her anything to be embarrassed about when it comes to me.
And you do it without any help. I can't even imagine. I could barely take care of myself, let alone another person.
I have Sarah, our nanny, and Vivian. She keeps Finn one weekend a month, and she used to take care of Finn while I was at work. I wouldn't have made it through her baby years without Vivian. Bree helps, too. I've never been alone when it came to Finley.
Bree was the redhead at the party, right? The pretty one with the black suit?
Yeah. I try to include her in what I can.
His words jogged my memory. Oh, wow, she's the other fifth grade teacher at the elementary school.
She is. She recognized you.
I watched Finley brush off another shell and add it to her collection. Does she get to see Claire?
Jackson's jaw clenched and I immediately regretted asking. She sees her about once a year if Claire decides to visit for Christmas, and she calls, but Claire has never been good about consistency. She'll call once a day for a week, and then go another 3 months without a peep.
He shrugged as we followed Finley, who was already at the top of the dune.
That's Claire.
There wasn't any condemnation in his tone. Had I been in that situation, I wouldn't have been able to say the same. Was he still waiting for Claire to come back?
My cell phone rang as we crested the dune, which kept me from asking that very personal, very not-my-business question.
Hello? I answered, plugging my ear to hear over the sound of the drills as we neared the house.
My insurance agent started at 1,000,000 miles an hour, ending with, "So we'll need the VIN and registration to add it to your policy now that it's out of storage."
Right. The truck. We reached Jackson's backyard, and I examined the truck from a distance. I could open the door and grab everything from the glove box. Easy. It wasn't like I was driving the damned thing.
"Sure, give me a second and I'll get it," I said to my agent as Steve waved from his command center.
"I just need to grab something out of the truck," I told Jackson, covering the mouthpiece as we closed in on Steve.
Jackson nodded as Finley took his hand, pulling him toward the book of color swatches. My heart rate spiked as I drew closer to the truck, but I shook it off. Dr. Searcy said that part of the protocol would be addressing the things I avoided because they triggered my thoughts of Will. That particular part was supposed to start in 5 more weeks, but I could jump ahead a little. Right?
Almost there, I told my agent as I braced the phone on my shoulder and entered the code on the driver's side door. It swung open easily, and I used the running board that lowered automatically to climb up into the cab.
God, that scent. The memory hit me hard.
"William Carter, how in the sweet hell do you expect me to get up there in these?"
I flashed my heels under my gown. His grin stopped my heart.
"I've got you, Morgan. Don't worry."
He reached into the pocket of his dress blues and pulled out his key fob, lowering the running board with the press of a button.
"This might be easier, though."
In a moment that passed way too quickly, I was in his arms as he climbed up on the board and lifted me into the cab.
"I wouldn't want you getting that pretty dress all dirty."
I froze. One hand on the steering wheel and one on the console, my gaze rose to the visor where his wings, the ones I'd pinned on him at graduation, were fastened. I sucked in a breath, but it only made it worse. Everything still smelled like Will, even after all this time. There was no escaping, no swallowing back the uninvited memory, no stopping the vice around my throat that tightened as my breaths came faster and faster. I arched my neck, trying to make enough room for air to flow freely, but every ounce of breath I sucked in was thick with the scent of Will. I loved him. God, I loved him, and now this was all I had. He was gone. We'd never get the homecoming kiss he promised me, or the chance to be as happy as our friends. Tears pricked my eyes, not just from the thoughts, but from the physical pain of my throat closing. My head swam as a voice called my name. Please let it be him. Why was I still alive when someone as good as Will wasn't?
"I've never seen anyone look as beautiful as you do tonight, Morgan."
But that wasn't real. That was 2 years and a lifetime ago. I shoved myself sideways and almost missed the running board as I fled the cab. The sand cushioned my feet after falling those last few inches, and I sidestepped only to collapse against the back door and slide to the ground, uncaring of the scraping sensation as my back raked across the running board before my butt hit the ground.
Breathe. You have to breathe.
My cell phone plummeted as I drew my knees to my chest. I braced my elbows and cradled my head, blocking my ears like that might drown out the sound of his voice. Another muffled voice, different this time, called my name through the raging cacophony of memories that wouldn't shut up, wouldn't go back inside the box I kept them in.
"Morgan, look at me."
Strong hands gripped my wrists. My eyes flew open wide, taken in the set of ocean blue ones only inches away. Tears leaked in a steady stream down my face as I struggled to get the air in, my breaths coming in quick, rasping pants. Jackson. It was Jackson who'd been calling my name. Will wasn't here. He couldn't be, because he was dead.
Morgan, what's going on?
Jackson asked, his brows furrowed in concern. I can't. I managed to force out, then threw my head back, trying to dislodge the vice from my throat.
Okay.
He soothed, his grip softening on my wrists.
It's okay. Just breathe.
If it was that fucking easy, I wouldn't be in this position.
It's okay. I'm right here.
Our eyes stayed locked as his thumbs stroked a steady rhythm on the inside of my wrists, and slowly, so slowly, my breathing eased to match the pace of those strokes. My throat loosened in increments so small they couldn't be measured. Minutes, hours. I wasn't certain how long he stayed there, kneeling in front of me, witnessing my utter meltdown. But soon, another voice cut through the fog. My phone, I croaked. Can you?
Got it.
He grabbed my phone and put it to his ear, still stroking my wrist with his other thumb.
Morgan's not feeling well. Can she call you?
Help her. Air filled my lungs in great heaps, but the immovable ache in my throat remained.
This is Jax Montgomery. I'm Morgan's neighbor. She just asked if I could help you. What exactly do you need?
His brows rose slightly as he listened to the reply.
Got it. Morgan, do you want me to get the registration from the truck?
I nodded. Glove box. His lips pursed as he glanced between my eyes and the open door.
Will you be okay for a second?
I nodded again. It was safer than trusting my vocal cords.
Give me just a minute,
he said into my phone. Then he stroked the side of my face, brushing that thumb over my cheekbone.
Just keep breathing.
My metronome vanished as he climbed into the cab. I heard shuffling, then the sound of the glove box opening. His strong, sure voice read her the information she'd need to insure the truck properly, giving her the VIN number, and then pausing before saying,
It's registered to William Carter. Wait, there's a transfer signed here by Arthur Livingston, personal representative to Morgan E. Bartley. Right, I'll tell her. Is that all? Okay, you too. Bye.
The glove box snapped shut, and a few breaths later, I managed to turn my head to see Jackson step down from the cab, tall enough that he actually fit the damned truck. He was easily 4 inches taller than Will had been, wider in the shoulders, too. Stop comparing them. I tried to do the mental exercise I'd watched on YouTube, where I visualized myself shoving all my thoughts about Will into the neat little box in my head and slamming the lid shut.
All done,
Jackson said, dropping to my eye level. Thank you. I focused on the sand as my face flushed hot.
Look at me.
Slowly, I let my eyes travel upward until I met his.
You have panic attacks. That's nothing to be ashamed of.
His gaze bore into mine, driving home the sincerity of his words. Anxiety attacks, I corrected him. The ache in my throat flared, and I knew it wouldn't recede until I took my rescue meds, which happened to be back at the B&B. His brow furrowed.
What triggered you?
When I didn't answer, he guessed.
The truck?
I nodded. I have to get back to the bed and breakfast. My meds are there. He stood, then offered me his hand. I took it, and he pulled me easily to my feet.
Let me drive you.
No, I'm fine. My fingers busied themselves brushing the sand from my legs. I can drive. God, I had to get out of here before I embarrassed myself any further.
Morgan, really, let me drive you. Please.
He reached for my arm, then thought better of it, pulling his hand back. I can do it myself, I whispered as I pushed the lock button on the truck.
I just want to help,
he said softly as I walked past him to where the Mini was parked. You did. I slid into the driver's seat and arched my neck as another wave of tension washed over me like an aftershock. I ran my hands over my steering wheel, and sighed as my emotions lowered to a simmer. That was better.
Who was he to you?
Jackson asked, looking down at me from the open door. Every label I could put on what I had with Will felt too small, too pale in comparison to what we'd been and what we could have evolved into, and yet too big for our lack of definition. Everything and yet nothing. I gave him the truth in the simplest terms I could, giving him the best perspective of me he could have, and hiding nothing. Hi, I'm Morgan. I'm a hot mess. Jackson didn't cringe, didn't roll his eyes or slam the door. No, that would have made this easier, running away from him. Instead, he nodded.
Okay, I can understand that. Drive safe, okay? Maybe you can text me when you get there.
He stepped free of the door. I don't have your number. Before he could offer it to me, I swung the door shut. The engine roared to life as I turned the key, and then I backed out of the long drive once he was clear. He understood. Of course he understood. And that was exactly why I couldn't let him drive me to the B&B. Because back on that beach, I'd felt something. We'd connected. I didn't have anything to offer, and even if I did, I'd be damned if I was ever going to open up to a man who was in love with another woman. I would never make that mistake again. Ever. I was done being someone's consolation prize. Damn you, Will. I think you ruined me.
Chapter 6. Jackson.
Night, Daddy. Finn called out for the sixth time since I'd kissed her goodnight about 2 minutes ago.
Night, Finn. I blew her a kiss but gave her the I'm not kidding look. She giggled accordingly. I turned off her light and shut the door without any protest, so I called it a win. With Finn tucked in, my mind took off racing as I walked downstairs, giving me every reason not to do this. Telling me over and over not to violate Morgan's privacy, reminding me that she hadn't given me details for a reason. I grabbed a bottle of water from the fridge. No, if only it had bubbles and alcohol and was beer. But I was on call, so water it was. The weather had turned, which meant there was a good chance I'd get called in anyway. Hopefully Morgan had made it to wherever she was staying, but it wasn't like I could text her or anything. That would have required having her phone number. Having her phone number made it something more than neighborly concern. Not that I wouldn't have given her mine if she hadn't shut the door and raced away. I snagged my iPad on the way to the couch, barely glancing at the sheets of rain pounding my deck, and already had the browser open before my conscience could get the best of me. I had to know. The second the sun had flashed on the silver wings pinned to the truck's visor, I'd gotten a sick feeling in my stomach. Basically, I'd been nauseated for the last 5 hours. I tapped on the browser, and my keyboard appeared on the screen. Don't do it. I should have waited for her to tell me. Should have been that patient, good guy she thought I was, capable of sitting quietly while she healed enough to tell me what happened to her. To him. But I'd already warned her that I was a selfish, careless asshole, and the asshole in me wanted to know. I wasn't willing to wait. Carter William, D, U.S. Army. I typed the name I'd read on both the registration and the dog tags that hung from the rearview mirror and cursed as the results populated. A guy in his mid-20s with wavy brown hair and brown eyes appeared on my screen in a series of pictures above a list of links. I bypassed the picture of him in uniform and clicked on the one where he smiled. It took me to a social media profile. The cover photo stopped me in my tracks. It was a group photo taken at a military formal with four lieutenants in dress blues and their dates. Instead of one of those posed formal pictures, it was a candid, everyone laughing, smiling, or in the blonde couple's case, kissing. I immediately recognized Sam, the girl who'd helped Morgan move in, standing near the center with one of the lieutenants. Next to her stood the guy whose name tag read Carter. And there was Morgan. She was mid-laugh in a hell of a dress, her nose scrunched and her head tilted slightly toward Carter. So beautiful, joyous, and with none of the shadows that haunted her in her eyes. His arm wrapped around her waist, pulling her close, and his eyes were locked on hers in a look full of so much awe that I almost felt like I was intruding on something.
You are, dumbass. But I looked closer. There was no wings on any of the lieutenants. I sent up a little prayer that the wings in the truck were just a coincidence. Any kind of coincidence. I noted that the picture was taken 2 years ago December and minimized it. I'll only look at a few more, I mumbled, like it was any kind of excuse for what I was doing. I clicked on the highlighted photos and the first popped up full screen. It was the same truck, covered in mud in the middle of a field, and leaning against it was Morgan. Her head was tilted down, the brim of a maroon baseball cap covering her face, but I'd recognize those legs anywhere. The next was a candid of Will wearing the same hat. Next, shit. There was Morgan, her hair pulled back on one shoulder, pinning a set of shiny silver wings on his chest while he stood in his dress blues, looking stoically ahead. Fuck. Those had to be the same wings on the truck's visor. Raking my hands over my hair, I let out a deep sigh. Then I closed out the social media page without looking at any of his posts and went back to the search, clicking on the news story listed second. Local pilot killed in Afghanistan. The family of William Carter has confirmed the reports that he was killed this weekend in Afghanistan. Carter, an Enterprise High School alum turned West Point graduate, was serving his first tour overseas as a medevac pilot when he fell to small arms fire that followed a helicopter crash. Carter and his crew had been on a rescue mission for another downed aircraft. According to a spokesman from his unit at Fort Campbell, Carter saved the lives of three other soldiers before his death, personally pulling four pilots from the cockpits of the dual crash, two of whom were already deceased. Going above and beyond the call of duty, and with blatant disregard for his own safety, Carter stood alone, discharging his weapon to protect the wounded soldiers, although he had been wounded in the crash himself. He was killed, shielding the wounded men. I cannot put our grief into words at the loss of Lieutenant Carter, Brigadier General Richard Donovan, the previous CG of Fort Rucker, told us by phone. It doesn't surprise me that he gave his life for others. That's simply who he was. William Carter is survived by him. I put my iPad on the coffee table, having read more than enough. There was only one reason a unit spokesman would be that detailed to the press, the same reason they used the deliberate phrasing of going above and beyond the call of duty and with blatant disregard for his own safety. Will wasn't just a pilot, or the guy Morgan was obviously still in love with. He was a fucking hero, the kind who got awarded medals that took years to receive. No wonder she was torn up as hell. She didn't have to put the guy on a pedestal, he was already up there. Not only that, but the minute she realized what I did for a living, she'd push me so far away that we might as well live on opposite sides of the island. Not that I blame her. I had my own hang-ups about the death of my parents. I couldn't imagine how Morgan felt about the military, or helicopter pilots in general. And I was both. And given what I'd just read, I didn't hold a candle to that guy. Awesome. I'd never been one for inferiority complexes. I was damn good at what I did. Hell, I was the best, and proud of it. I'd graduated top of my major at MIT, top of my class in flight school, and guaranteed my first duty station pick. I'd completed hundreds of successful rescues, some of which were seen as unwinnable, and yet none of that compared to what he'd done. For the first time in my life, I was forced into second place in a race I hadn't been aware I'd been running. And the guy was miles ahead. I was literally losing to a ghost. Since when did you want to win? I thought about it for a second, wishing the answer was when she'd come out to the barbecue, when we'd walked down the beach earlier today, or even when she'd had the telltale signs of an anxiety attack at the truck. But something had drawn me to her the first moment our eyes had locked on the beach, and then hooked me the minute I found her dangling through her landing, cool as a cucumber. Shit, I didn't just like her. I wanted her, and not just in my bed, but in my life. And I didn't have a shot in hell with her. 5 days later, the ringer on my phone sounded around 10:30 p.m., and I swiped it open before checking the caller ID. Montgomery, I answered. It's Goodwin. We have a May Day and the other bird is already in the field. Fuck. I stood immediately sprinting for my stairs. Run up the bird, I'll be there ASAP. I hung up, hitting the speed dial for Sarah as I dropped my clothes. I had it timed to 7 minutes flat. "Mr. Montgomery?" she answered. "Hey, I hate to do this to you, but I just got a call. I'll be there in a second. I'm still dressed and everything." My 21-year-old nanny promptly hung up on me. I threw on my flight suit and booted up, hit the bathroom, tossed a few granola bars and a Monster into my bag, and opened the door just as Sarah reached the threshold.
"It's coming down out there," she said by way of greeting.
"Yes, thank you. I'm sorry for calling so late." I hated calling her, forcing her to drop what she was doing.
"It's what you pay me for. Now go save people."
She waved me off and headed for the living room. I tossed my rain gear on and ran down the steps. Exactly 7 minutes after I got the call, we took off from the Coast Guard station with Goodwin as my co-pilot, Moreno as my mechanic, and Garrett as our rescue swimmer. As we headed out over the water into wind and rain, my mind cleared of Morgan, her dead boyfriend, and even Finn, leaving only the bird, the weather, and the mission. "Time to save some lives," I said over the comm, keeping our tradition. And we did. The skyline blushed with impending sunrise as I parked my Land Cruiser in the driveway. Long fucking night. The rain had stopped around midnight, right around the time we'd returned from the rescue, 3 extra passengers heavy. We'd barely gotten the small family off their even smaller boat in time. It had gone down just after Garrett had hauled the father on board. Their bad day had a happy ending. 2 living parents, 1 living teenage boy. I trudged up the steps, weariness pulling at every muscle in my body. If I got to sleep in the next 15 minutes, I could get a solid 3 hours before Finn woke up. I woke Sarah on the couch and sent her home, then headed toward the kitchen in search of water. The refrigerator was stocked, and I took a cold one from the second shelf and closed the door with my hip, already twisting the top open. My cell phone rang from my back pocket, and I paused mid-drink to yank it free, swallowing and lowering the bottle when I saw who it was. "Claire?"
"Hey."
Her voice was barely audible with background party noise.
"What are you doing?"
I glanced at the clock. "It's 5 a.m., so I figured I'd sleep while I can."
"Oh, late night?"
A door shut and the background noise dropped exponentially. "Obviously." I leaned back against the kitchen counter. "Look, I just got home from work and I know you didn't call to talk to Finn, so what's up?" My voice was as gentle as I could make it, but I was fucking exhausted.
"I can't just call to say hello?"
Her little laugh was tinged with sadness. "Sure you can, just not at 5 a.m. when you're clearly still out for the night." I rubbed the bridge of my nose.
"I guess,"
she sighed.
"I guess I just miss you, Jax."
5 years ago, those words would have meant the world to me. They would have kept me hanging on for her next phone call, hanging on to her. "Claire, it's not me you should be missing. It's Finley. She hasn't talked to you in 2 months.
"If I knew I was going to get a lecture, I wouldn't have called. It's not my fault that my filming schedule isn't conducive to calling."
The urge to tell her off was rising, but Finn was the one who'd suffer if I pissed Claire off and she chose not to call again. "I'm not lecturing you, I'm just being honest."
"How is she?"
Her voice softened. "Good. Happy. Healthy. Everything you want to hear." I blinked hard, trying to stay awake.
"Does she ask about me?"
"Of course she does. You're her mother."
"Don't you miss me even a little, Jax?"
My stomach sank. "Don't."
"I heard your new neighbor is pretty. Bree told me that she met her at one of your barbecues. Said you seemed pretty, what was the word she used? Entranced? Enamored? Enchanted? That was it. She said you seemed enchanted by her."
Her tone turned sharp. "Hell no. She's not up for discussion."
"Oh, so she is pretty. Does Finley like her too?"
She bit the question out. "She is none of your business." I snapped each word, hoping she'd get the point.
"I think I have a right to know who my daughter spends time with, don't you?"
She took the words straight out of Bree's mouth. Exhaustion stripped me of my usual caution. "Do not start. I haven't slept in 30 hours, and I don't have the patience to do this with you. Go back to whatever party you're at, Claire. I'm going to sleep because our daughter will be up in a couple of hours. You might want to call her sometime. I chugged the rest of the water bottle.
Jax, don't be mad at me.
Her voice dripped with sugar.
You know how much I love Finley. She's the most important thing in my life. I'm working my ass off to make it out here, and it's all for her. For all of us. It's the hardest thing I've ever done. And I miss you. I miss our life.
I tossed the bottle in the trash can and looked up at the framed picture of Finn and me on the beach. You want to be a part of Finley's life? Make the effort. She's amazing, and you're missing it.
What about yours?
Again, that damned teasing little lilt of her voice had me shaking my head. In the past, I would have said something like, "We'll see." I wouldn't have shut any doors on Claire that would have given Finn a chance at having that picket-fenced family I'd mistakenly thought she was being born into. But that dream was just that, a dream, and the reality of it was that I deserved to be happy. Finn and I both did.
Jax, did you hear me? I asked about being a part of your life.
Claire, I think we both know that ship sailed a long time ago. She gasped.
But Jax,
I gotta go, Claire. If you want to call back in a few hours, Finn will be up. Bye. I hung up the phone before she could beg me to change my mind, to assure her that we'd be waiting here with open arms if she ever decided to come back. She'd always be Finley's mother, but she wasn't her mom. Not in the ways that mattered. Thank you. I really appreciate this. Sarah needed the day off. I told Christina as I picked up Finley from her shop the next day.
I really don't mind.
She promised as Finley got her fingerprints all over the farthest display case in Christina's jewelry store.
It's honestly wonderful to have her. She sells a surprising amount of pendants. Seriously. Besides, it's good practice for when Peter and I decide to have kids.
Not that I'm in any rush for that, she added quickly as she knocked on a piece of driftwood.
I mean, we've only been married a couple of years. I'd like to have him all to myself for a bit longer.
Her brown eyes widened.
Not that Finn isn't great. Shit, did I just put my foot in my mouth?
She finished in a whisper. Not at all, I said with a laugh. I absolutely get what you're saying.
Why don't you two come over for dinner? I'm sure Peter would love to see you off duty, and I make a really awesome pizza order.
My watch read 4:30, enough time to take Finn seashell hunting and play a round of her current video game obsession. Thanks for the offer, but I think we're going to head home. She's been itching to shell hunt lately.
Daddy, look at this one.
She leaned over the glass case, already on a step stool, and her tiptoes. Don't lean on that, honey, I told her as I came up behind her. You might break the glass and get blood all over the pretty jewelry. She shot me a grown-up dose of side-eye.
Look at the pink one. It's pretty.
And now her face was smashed against the glass. I cringed in Christina's direction, but she waved me off, already wiping down the other display cases. It is pretty, I assured my girl, seeing the pale pink sea glass pendant encased in silver hanging from a chain.
Morgan would like it.
Morgan? A week now, and she still hadn't come back when I'd been home. I bet she would. Want to buy it for her? I offered.
Nah,
she said, shaking her head. Then she wiggled out from where my arms had caged her and rushed over to Christina.
Miss Tina!
She tugged on Christina's shirt, just in case her words weren't enough.
Yes, sugar? Would you make one for Morgan?
Finley asked.
One what? A sea glass necklace? I'll find the sea glass.
Her blue eyes were puppy-level cute as they widened in expectation. Christina cocked an eyebrow at me, and I nodded. I guess I wasn't the only one missing our neighbor.
Of course. You can help me set it and everything, Christina promised. Yay! Thank you!
She jumped, throwing her arms in the air. Once she landed, she ran back to me.
We can go now.
Her permission was given in all seriousness. Well, since you're ready, I answered. She nodded, grabbing her small backpack on her way to the door.
Reconsider dinner?
Christina asked as she walked us out.
We always worry about you two. Or is it you three now?
Morgan's just a neighbor. I hefted Finn into her car seat and she buckled herself in.
Well, I'm hearing rumors from a certain barbecue that she might not just be your neighbor.
She gave me a look that said she expected an explanation. What the hell was Morgan? She's beautiful, and smart and funny, and my neighbor. Finn and I are just taking her under our wings since she's new. Speaking of which, she could really use a friend here. And you're the most level-headed woman I know. She blinked at me for a second. Christina?
Oh, I was just trying to decide if level-headed was the compliment I was going for. Fun, outgoing, awesome, she suggested.
Okay, you are the most fun, outgoing, awesome woman I know. Plus, I think you two would get along great. Morgan could deny it all she wanted, but she had to be lonely. I had work and friends and Finn, and even I got lonely sometimes. All Morgan had was a house once Sam left after the summer.
Have her swing by the shop. I'll make sure not to creep her out.
I rubbed my hand on the back of my neck. Yeah, I'm not sure I can get her to do that. I've tried once already, but she's on the hermit career path at the moment. I swear, she's amazing.
So you want me to go by her place and actually creep her out?
She stared me down. Pretty much. Next week, maybe? She's right next door to us. Thanks. I hopped into the Land Cruiser and started her up.
Uh-huh,
she said through the open window.
You've got it bad, she called out.
Just my neighbor, I answered as I pulled out of the small parking lot. After what I'd learned about her past, that was all she'd ever let me be. We turned onto our street a few minutes later. Best part of living on an island was the almost non-existent commute. Finn slipped her hand out of the window, letting it ride the wind for the last half mile. Yeah, we were going to be all right, even if Claire never got her shit together in the parenting department. I noticed two things simultaneously as I pulled into our driveway. The first was that Morgan was home, or at least her mini was. The second, Vivian was here. This had the potential to get really awkward. I parked, and Finn had already unsnapped her buckles by the time I opened her door. She jumped into my arms and I shifted her onto my side, shutting the garage behind us as I carried her around the front of the house.
Morgan!
Finn called out over the sound of men climbing down from Morgan's almost finished roof. They'd made a huge amount of progress compared to when I'd left this morning. Half the roof was shingled and it looked like they were quitting for the day. They even managed to save the old weather vane, which two of the roofers were anchoring back in its original position. There was no sign of Vivian, which meant she was probably in the house.
Finn!
Morgan waved from next to Steve and subsequently lost her grip on the paperback she'd been holding. She bent quickly to retrieve it, then set it on the drafting table as we walked over. I was struck by the strangest urge to get a copy of whatever she was reading. In my experience, what someone read told you almost everything you needed to know about them. Claire had preferred drama, anything that fired up her imagination. Garrett liked war biographies. Sawyer enjoyed not reading, ever. Me? I went for Griffin, Clancy, or anything that pulled me out of my life for a minute. What was Morgan into? Did she read chick lit? Romance? Nonfiction? Was she into horror? Or was comedy more her thing? I put Finley on the ground once we reached the drafting table, keeping my eyes north of Morgan's turquoise tank top and way north of those tiny white shorts. I was going to need to join a support group if I couldn't shake my obsession with her legs.
I missed you,
Morgan said, dropping to eye level with Finn and pulling her into a big hug. Oh, shit. For the first time, I was jealous of my kid.
I missed you too. And you almost have a roof. Are you coming back soon?
4 days, Steve promised, even though Morgan shot him a disbelieving look. You'd be surprised how fast a roof goes on, he finished as he packed up for the day.
How have you been?
Morgan asked Finn. Finn jabbered a mile a minute, telling Morgan all about her days like she'd been gone an eternity. Okay, maybe it had felt a little long. Morgan nodded dutifully, adding a word here and there as Finley jumped from subject to subject and was now on something related to Doc McStuffins. Morgan's smile hit me in the gut like a freight train. Shit, I was in trouble. She shared that grin with me when she glanced up, and I answered it with one of my own, knowing there was no hope of getting a word in edgewise now that Finn was on a roll. And now she'd moved on to Christina's cat.
Jackson.
My stomach lurched at the wariness in Vivian's voice behind me.
Hey, Grammy,
Finn called, breaking her filibuster to hug Vivian quickly, then turning back to Morgan to continue her tale, which had shifted to the lunch menu at her preschool.
Can we talk? Vivian asked softly. Claire called this morning about what happened last night.
Morgan's eyes met mine. Steve's eyebrows shot up.
Finn, why don't we go?
Morgan looked around for a destination. We're done for the day. Steve gestured toward his team as they started climbing down from the roof. You can show her the progress, he suggested.
That sounds like a great idea. Then you can finish telling me all about your favorite foods.
Morgan clasped Finn's hand and grabbed her beach bag.
Oh, there's macaroni and cheese and pizza and ice cream and...
I shot Morgan a thankful look and she nodded, already walking back toward her house and out of ear range. And I'm going somewhere else, Steve said with a nod. Always good to see you, Mrs. Lewis. Then he basically speedwalked toward the nearest piece of equipment. Hey, Vivian. I turned to the side so I could see Finn out of my peripherals and gave my would-have-been mother-in-law my attention.
She's lovely, Vivian remarked with a slight curve of her lips. Good with Finn, too.
I watched as Morgan put her floppy sun hat on Finn, which completely swamped her little head. Yeah, she is. We lucked out in the new neighbor department.
Oh, Jackson. Her shoulders sagged. Claire was so upset this morning.
Was she? I folded my arms across my chest as I glanced over to Morgan and Finn, seeing them sitting on a blanket Morgan had spread out as she pointed to the changes in the house.
She was really upset, going on about how you didn't want her in Finn's life and wouldn't even put her on the phone.
She smoothed her silver chin-length bob, which was her most obvious tell for stress. And you think I would say that to Claire? She swallowed and looked away.
Well, no. That doesn't sound like you, but Claire was crying and carrying on something fierce.
Did she tell you that she called from a party at 5 a.m, our time? Vivian's eyebrows shot up.
What? No.
She didn't ask to talk to Finn, and I wasn't going to wake her up that early anyway. I even told her to call back in a few hours once Finn was awake. I told her gently. I hated laying Claire's shit bare to Vivian. It wasn't her fault that Claire was... whatever she was.
Oh.
She lifted her hand to her face and smoothed the lines of her forehead.
Now I feel foolish.
Don't. We both know what a good actress Claire is.
I know. But it's not like her to get so upset over.
She clamped her mouth shut and looked away. Me, I supplied, knowing that was the real source of Claire's tirade.
I know it's none of my business what happens between you two.
I laughed. Vivian, nothing has been happening between us for years. She will always be Finn's mother, but... One of the roofers shouted and my attention snapped to the roofline, where the man slipped and began falling. My stomach clenched as he flung out his arms but couldn't stop, heading for the huge bronze weather vane that perched midway down the roof right above. Morgan! I shouted, already running as he slammed into the sculpture. The sound of cracking wood followed instantly as the weather vane tore free. Above you! Her eyes flew from the roof to mine and then back up to where 100 pounds of bronze plummeted toward where she sat with Finley. Oh God, I wasn't going to make it. It was going to hit them.
Chapter 7. Morgan. Just don't be afraid to take another risk, okay?
Oh, God.
There was no time. I side-tackled Finley, taking her down in a mess of knees and elbows, and used my momentum to roll with my arms around her. As the sky filled my vision, so did the falling hunk of death, and I threw everything I had into the move. Keep her on the bottom. I landed on top, curving myself around her as much as possible. The object slammed into the ground with a booming thud in the same millisecond. Sand and rocks blasted the side of my face. My heart slammed against my ribs, the beat deafening.
Finley! Morgan!
I could hear the panic in Jackson's voice, so I wasn't dead, right? And Finley was breathing under me, so she wasn't either.
Oh, thank God!
Jackson shouted, skidding to a halt next to us and hitting his knees.
Are you okay?
Words wouldn't form, so I nodded.
I'm okay,
Finley announced, her voice muffled under me. She's okay, she's okay, she's okay. I fell to the side, taking my weight off Finn, and Jackson immediately grabbed her to his chest.
Are you okay?
He asked again, pushing her to arm's length, looking her over for injuries. I sat up slowly as workers and Finn's grandmother came running. The weather vane I'd been so damned insistent about had fallen from the roof. God, it was huge.
I'm fine, Finley promised.
It had landed right where we'd been a second ago, the enormous arrow stabbing through the edge of the blanket and pinning the fabric to the ground.
Are you sure?
Jackson's hands ran down her limbs quickly, no doubt checking for broken bones. Someone helped me to my feet, and I wavered, my heart galloping, feeling something wet streak my face. I stumbled away from the group, of all the times to cry. I made it as far as the base of my temporary steps before I was engulfed in a pair of arms and pressed against a firm, warm chest. The amazing combination of ocean, lemongrass, and soap filled my lungs as I breathed him in.
Jackson,
please tell me you're okay,
he begged, his chin resting on the top of my head. I stammered, my knees starting to shake. What the hell was wrong with me? He pulled back, wincing at something he saw on my face and then scanning down my body.
Are you injured?
I shook my head.
Tell me if anything else hurts.
Anything else? His hand swept down my arms, then my ribs just under my breasts, over my belly, and then framed my hips, his eyes locking with mine every few seconds to see if I'd flinch. Then he did the same from mid-thigh to my ankles.
No pain?
I shook my head. I'm fine, I managed to get out. He rose, standing so my eyes were level with his chest.
You're not fine. You're bleeding,
he said softly, his thumb brushing my cheek and coming away red. Ah, so that was the wetness. I'm okay. I can wash up. At least my mouth was working again. I turned to head toward my steps, but my knees went all wobbly.
Yeah, no.
Jackson lifted me, putting one arm behind my back and the other behind my knees.
I've got you.
What's wrong with me? I asked as my hand trembled. Was this an anxiety attack? They'd never presented like this before.
Adrenaline rush. It has nowhere to go,
he explained as he carried me across my yard, passing the small gathering of construction crew members.
It'll pass in a few minutes, maybe a little longer.
I can clean my face, I protested as he reached his driveway.
Morgan, you just saved my daughter's life. Could you please just let me help you? He snapped.
I studied his face as he climbed his stairs, his jaw flexed, his lips pressed into a line, and in his eyes, there was a wildness. Fear. Of course he'd been afraid. He'd nearly lost Finley. All because I'd taken her to the house when Steve told me they'd finished for the day. I'd nearly gotten Finn killed. The inside of his home wasn't exactly what I'd expected. Not that I even knew what to expect from Jackson. The decorations were simple, clean, a blend of coastal blues and rich wood tones with white accents. The walls were decorated with framed artwork I assumed was made by Finley. He carried me through the living room and into the kitchen, setting me carefully on the granite counter near the sink. I yelped as the icy stone came into contact with my sun-warmed skin.
What hurts?
He asked immediately, scanning me like he could see through my clothes and skin. Nothing. Granite's cold, I muttered, bracing my hands on the edge of the counter.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that. Wait here.
He disappeared and I studied his kitchen. It was U-shaped, the opening facing the living room. A long slab of granite to the left served as a breakfast bar. A small dining set filled the space to the sliding glass door, and off to the side, a play nook was happily cluttered with toys in contrast to the immaculately clean kitchen. Does he keep his bedroom this clean, too? I blinked that thought right out of my head. God, was this trembling going to stop anytime soon? He returned, set a first aid kit on the counter, then wrapped a soft quilt around my shoulders, his arms encircling me for the barest of moments.
That should help,
he said softly,
Thank you. I tucked the blanket closer. That's my line.
He took my chin between his thumb and forefinger, then gently tilted my head so he could examine my cheek.
Finley's really okay, right?
She's fine. You're both fine.
That last part was nearly a whisper. My heart galloped as the adrenaline ran its course, and the sight of his lips, so close to mine, wasn't helping slow its cadence.
Your house is beautiful, I blurted, trying to think about anything other than what had just happened, or the warmth of his fingers.
Those were dangerous subjects.
Thanks. It works for us,
he said in that way guys had of dismissing compliments and giving me a half smile. He was good under pressure. I tried to pull myself together while he dampened a washcloth at the kitchen sink, but he was back faster than I could manage the Herculean task.
You got blasted with sand and a few rocks. If your cuts are anything to gauge by, I want to clean it out.
He paused.
Unless you'd rather we go to the clinic.
No, here is good. I shifted my legs so he could get close enough to do it. He stepped between my thighs, his hips resting against the insides of my bare knees.
Mercy.
The flush of heat that swept over my body had nothing to do with the warmth of the blanket, and everything to do with his proximity. It had to be the adrenaline, right? One of those you-almost-died coping mechanisms? It's because he's gorgeous as sin, you moron.
This one looks the worst, but it's not too deep,
he murmured, cradling the uninjured side of my face with warm, gentle fingers while assessing the other. Okay, I mentally listed every reason I wasn't allowed to be attracted to this man and prayed my body got with the program. One, I was pretty sure he was in love with his ex, and apparently something had gone down with them last night. Two, he lived next door, which meant when whatever I wasn't going to allow happen anyway eventually didn't work out, I'd be stuck seeing him every freaking day. Three. I hissed as the washcloth brushed over an abrasion along my cheekbone. Sorry.
He dabbed carefully at the skin. Don't worry, I replied, trying to keep my eyes anywhere but on his and failing.
Three. His eyes were too blue. Ocean blue. Flawlessly freaking blue. That was a con because they were too distracting. Who the hell wanted to be constantly distracted like that? I'd never get anything done. Four, I was in the middle of some pretty intensive therapy and didn't have anything to offer. My emotional tank was on empty, and that wasn't fair to him. Five,
this might hurt.
Exactly. He'd said it perfectly. I'd already swallowed all the pain I could take when it came to relationships.
I know.
But it still didn't stop me from staring at his mouth. He applied antiseptic, taking extra care with a couple of the cuts, and I welcomed the sting, using it to keep me grounded.
I don't think you need stitches.
That's good. I looked down at my hands. At least they'd quit shaking. How the hell had I let that happen? I should have known better than to take Finley so close to the construction.
I don't know how to thank you,
he said. My eyes jerked to his. Thank me. I almost got her killed. His forehead puckered as he braced his hands on either side of me and leaned forward. My breath caught.
Morgan, that was not your fault. Steve said they were done for the day. You had no way of knowing that guy would fall. It was an accident, plain and simple.
It was so close, I whispered. It was so close. Just the idea of losing. Don't go there.
He rested his forehead on mine and overwhelmed my senses. Sight, scent, touch, sound. It was all Jackson.
It was too close. But you saved her. You got her out of the way and shielded her with your own body.
Anyone would have done it. My heart rate picked up again. His head lifted as he cradled my face.
No. A lot of people would have dived the other way, to safety. You deliberately put yourself between Finley and 100 pounds of sharp, pointy bronze. That's extraordinary.
His gaze dropped to my lips.
You're extraordinary.
Not for you.
Not for you! My sense of self-preservation screamed at me to run the other way, but a craving for him raced through my veins, flipping on switches that had lain dormant for almost 2 years. All that adrenaline had been replaced with something far more dangerous. Need. He lowered his head. The door burst open and Jackson retreated. Before I could process what had almost happened, Sam stood at the edge of the kitchen, her eyes wide. "I can't even leave you alone for 2 weeks," she exclaimed before crossing the floor and hauling me into a hug. "Are you okay? Stephen Finley told me what happened. They're both worried sick down there." She grabbed a hold of my shoulders and pushed back far enough to see for herself. "Ouch. It's just a scrape, and you're 2 days early." I'd never been so happy to see her in my entire life. "Is that a complaint?" She arched a brow. "Never." "Good, because I'd hate to see what would have happened in another 2 days," she teased with a shaky smile before yanking me into another hug. "Me too," I whispered, locking eyes with Jackson over her shoulder. Yeah, I saw it all too clearly, how easy it would be to step into something I wasn't ready for, assuming I wasn't mis-